Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
It is currently 6:12 on this Thursday morning, January 16th. Another chilly start right now. If you average the temperature, is about 47 degrees. And it's going up to 60 today, 63 tomorrow, and then 69 on Saturday with a chance for showers as a cold front pushes through. Sunday, windy, highs of 52, so it could feel colder than that. Then Monday and Tuesday, highs of 41, 36 on Tuesday, maybe a wintry mix. And Peyton Malone, you might have heard talking to Dave Cohen earlier, saying they don't really know yet what's going to happen. But I'm going to ask you on the Oakenheart Jeweler Talk and Text Line, keeping in mind that this has nothing to do with what actually happens, right? What you predict or want has nothing to do with the weather. But I had a conversation with somebody here yesterday, and they said they don't want any snow, they don't want any ice, they don't want any of that, because it's pretty for about an hour, and after that it gets dirty, and it creates a problem with traffic in the city, and we don't know how to deal with it and all of that. So I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to conduct this poll throughout the morning at 504-260-1870. Do you want it to snow or not? It's that simple. Yes to snow or no to snow. David Dreyfuss joins us now, Associate Professor of Supply Chain Management at Rutgers Business School and the Director of the Masters of Healthcare Analytics and Intelligence Program. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm great. How are you?
You have some experience with snow there in New Jersey, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
So are you a snow guy? Are you pro-snow or anti-snow?
I would say yes to the snow, especially if it's enough to go sledding on.
Okay. I don't know that we're going to have that here because it really can paralyze us because we don't know how to deal with it. We're not used to it. If the road's ice, then we're really in trouble. So I just thought I'd see what people think if they want it to snow or not. Let's talk about IV fluid shortages and what else is going on with the medical supply chain in the country. David?
Yeah, sure. A little bit more exciting than snow, perhaps, at times. But the IV fluid shortages in the U.S. Are still ongoing, but not nearly as severe as they were last year. And so for everyone listening, during Hurricane Helene last year, the Baxter manufacturing facility in North Carolina had to close due to the flooding in the area and the heavy rain. And they supply around 60% of the nation's IV fluids. And having that consolidated all into one place makes us a little bit fragile and likely for these types of events to happen or become more likely for them to happen. And so after the hurricane, they realized that it was going to be some time before they could start shipping more IV fluids and started sending out messages to hospitals, clinics, and others who regularly use IV fluids to start rationing. And there's a lot of guidelines on how people can ration them, but it did affect the healthcare supply chain, and that people's maybe elective surgeries had to be pushed back so that they could conserve on fluid usage, and many other kind of small things they could do in the near term to avoid making the shortage any worse.
You know, maybe we can talk about what is IV fluid, because I know for a lot of us it's what they hang on a bag and then they stick in our arm. Is it saline? Is it what's the other one?
Sure. Yeah, so essentially it is like a saline, a chloride kind of solution that they hang in the bag. That's right. That we see in our shows and in the hospitals, and they they're going to deliver it through an IV, you know, somewhere typically in the arm or something in the, and it's going to, it's sterile. So it's not like anybody can make it. You have to have a very sterile environment for it to be produced. You know, it's got to be put into specialized bags that can be shipped and stocked, and they do last a while on the shelf. They have quite a long shelf life, but, you know, in today's environment, we rarely keep too much inventory. So, you know, most hospitals, most healthcare facilities aren't going to even keep a month's worth of IV fluids, maybe 2 to 3 weeks. And as long as things are running smoothly, the deliveries keep showing up every few days or every week. And so they get to resupply on a regular basis. However, when we have these disruptions, you know, similar to maybe what we saw during our COVID days, when there's a severe disruption and things just are cut off, we don't have long to react before we start running low.
So how did all or most of the IV eggs get in Baxter's basket?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's been a big consolidation of hospitals across the nation, but also of healthcare companies in general. And so many of our drugs, pharmaceutical supplies, other, you know, basic healthcare supplies from, you know, bandages and these IV fluids, the consolidation of companies has been occurring for decades. And so now we have one facility in the U.S. producing 60% of all the fluids that we use. And again, under normal conditions, this is just fine. When things are going well, this doesn't affect anything. What it does is it brings down the cost, because they can run a very highly efficient manufacturing plant. They can run at very high utilizations of their machinery and keep the cost down. And that's really one of the reasons that we've seen a lot of the consolidation is they attempt to become, you know, more efficient through economies of scale by, you know, making more in one place. And that's been a driving force for the consolidation across the industry.
If you were, though, to draw a scale, you would have on one side economies of scale, right? But on the other side, you would have all the eggs in one basket. So it's kind of a balance. Or if you are going to go with the consolidation and economies of scale, then maybe you have to make sure that you have a facility that is fairly well protected and impervious to any type of interruption.
Yeah, so that's right. So what happens is the more economies of scale we try to achieve, you know, we're putting our eggs all in one basket, like you're saying. And so, yes, we become more susceptible to disruptions when this happens. And, you know, without, you know, lots of competition or without spreading our facilities out across different geographic locations, you know, it does leave us more vulnerable. And so there's things they can do, right? They can, you know, fortify their facility to make it less prone to flooding or, you know, being knocked out by a hurricane or any other natural disaster. You know, they could carry more stock in different places throughout the U.S. Or the world. We would call that like safety stock, having a buffer. And, you know, they could, you know, collaborate with their suppliers when these, especially like a hurricane, we typically see them coming. I think Hurricane Helene caught North Carolina off guard. Mm-hmm. But typically we have some warning, you know, like there in Louisiana, people shutter their homes. They might even leave for a few days if a storm is incoming. And so they can collaborate with their, you know, partners to store inventory somewhere else. I know in Florida, right after Hurricane Helene, there was another Hurricane Milton that came across Florida. There's actually another IV fluid manufacturing facility down in Florida, a different company, and they did take their stock and move it north temporarily, just in case. And so there are some, you know, collaborations like that could help offset these potential disruptions. But we can only do that so much. We still have disruptions that are going to happen as much as our best efforts. But then it becomes an issue of how quickly can we recover? You know, we might call that resilience in the supply chain world, but it's like how quickly can we get back to our normal operating time? And we can see that the IV fluid shortage is getting back there. But here we are already some months later, and it's going to be some months after this for it really to be fully back to the way it was. And is that good enough? You know, if you ask certain patients, of course not. The ones that were impacted directly by this. And so hopefully Baxter and others learn from this. They start to, you know, think about how can we do this differently next time? Do we need to change our locations? Do we need to work with our suppliers, our customers a little bit better next time? Do we need some help from the government or locally, regionally?
Let me sneak a break in here, David, because I got a question about that when it comes to supply chains in general. And, you know, a lot of us didn't know what a supply chain was until COVID happened. Then we got a crash course in it. And I'm not a big guy for government regulation. However, I am a common sense guy, and I know the government does keep our food safe for the most part and drugs safe, et cetera. And I just wonder if when it comes to some kind of government regulation, if when it comes to supply chain interruption, if you're going to have X amount of market share, then maybe you have to meet X requirements to make sure the country doesn't get caught in a bad spot if Y happens. We'll talk more when we come back. David Dreyfuss, our guest, associate professor of supply chain management at Rutgers Business School, director of the Masters of Healthcare Analytics and Intelligence Program. 6:23 traffic now, WWL. 6:28, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A couple of minutes left with David Dreyfuss, associate professor of supply chain management at Rutgers Business School and director of the Masters of Healthcare Analytics and Intelligence Program. I know, Professor, your specialty is in healthcare, but when it comes to supply chains in general, the thought that I raised before the break about, you know, I understand consolidation, I understand what's going on in the country, I understand the economies of scale and how, you know, you can do.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
More from one location with less people, with specialized machinery, et cetera, et cetera. But when it comes to vulnerability, these companies do have a responsibility, right, to make sure that if you're going to have 60% of the market share, you're going to have to make doggone sure that that's not interrupted if anything happens. Is there a role for government to play in any of this or not?
Sure, Tucker. Yeah, the government is pretty good, I think, at these short-term fixes and trying to ease some of the burden here. And so in this case, you know, we saw that, you know, people came together and put in some guidelines fairly quickly about how to conserve what we have, but then also bring in more from other places that we wouldn't normally source from. So Baxter does have facilities in other parts of the world. They also have competitors in other parts of the world and the U.S., and they very quickly started shipping in from those locations. Now, it doesn't happen overnight. They can, you know, fly things at times, but they still have to get the product onto a pallet, onto a plane, or onto a boat, and onto a truck. And so it still takes time to get things to us. And so they were very good. I know Baxter has plants in Asia, Canada, UK, other parts of Europe. And so the same thing happened with, like, we had a baby formula shortage some time ago, mm-hmm. and they eased the restrictions on importing baby formula from Europe to help ease that. And so in those cases, I think that's some of the role that the FDA and the government have to play in these types of cases. But, who is the responsibility really lie with? I think here we tend to put it on the business to, you know, have that continuity of supply. And at times, our government steps in. You know, it's not the government's not necessarily so good at like strategic stockpiling. Mm-hmm. During COVID, we found that they had ventilators that were, you know, out of order and sitting in the dust. So they're not necessarily great at managing their own inventory. And what happened, you know, in other instances, like down in Louisiana, you know, everybody in the U.S. was short of PPE. And Louisiana said, we don't want to go through this again. And one of the healthcare systems, one of the hospitals, I think Ochsner, partnered with a local company to start producing PPE locally. That has, you know, been a really nice joint venture down there. And other places did that as well, so that in the future, the same thing doesn't happen again. And unfortunately, we often have to learn the hard way.
Thank you, David. I appreciate the information as always. We learn something every time we talk to you. David Dreyfus, Associate Professor of Supply Chain Management at Rutgers University Business School. We also learn something every time we talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. He's next when we return here on WWL. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Another chilly day in southeastern Louisiana. Highs today around 60 degrees, a little bit warmer than it has been, but that's going to be late in the day, that high temperature. Keep in mind around 2 o'clock or so. Then tomorrow, highs of 63, chance for showers Saturday in advance of the cold front, a good chance for showers. And next week's it could turn real cold, and I've been asking you to text me at 504-260-1870 as to whether or not you want it to snow. And I'll read some more texts in a minute. Mike Strain joins us now, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Mike Strain?
Man, I am doing excellent. I guess we're getting ready for this cold weather, but I'm telling you, I don't want it to snow because, again, you know, people, pets, plants, and pipes, we've got to protect that. But also, it's going to be pretty tough out there if we get snow next week. And, you know, and of course, everybody's going to have to be very careful driving because everybody doesn't have four-wheel drives. And of course, you know, whatever the weather is, that's what we're going to deal with. And I've been talking to my farmers, I've been talking to my strawberry farmers and my crawfish farmers. And, you know, hopefully, you know, it won't get below 27 degrees. It won't get into the low teens. Now, North Louisiana is going to get pretty chilly, so we better get prepared for it.
Mike, when you talk about strawberry farmers and crawfish farmers and everything, what kind of effect does it have, whether it snows or not, but this cold blast, and I don't know if they know exactly how cold it's going to get or how far up north, but I know it's a lot colder in, say, Ruston or Shreveport right now than it is here, or it's going to be certainly next week. Talk about it as it affects the whole state, please.
Well, when you start looking at crawfish, one, you know, this cold weather, what will happen is that it'll delay the crawfish development by at least a week. So one, you know, when it's cold like that, the crawfish do not feed, so you won't be able to catch them in the traps, but it'll also delay their growth because they won't be eating and getting bigger. So it'll just slow it down by about a week. And so if it warms back up, you know, in about a week, we'll catch back up. Now, if you get hard freezes, really, really hard freezes, what it will do, it will actually damage the material that the crawfish feed on. It will cause that material to break down faster, the rice stubble, et cetera. And then initially, as it's breaking down, the crawfish will feed more. So you'll have a season with a little bit bigger crawfish early, but then a shorter season on the back end. Now, for strawberries, if it gets really cold, you can lose the flowers and the buds, and you will lose some strawberries. Generally speaking, we don't think it's going to get cold enough where we lose the plants. And so, you know, from that perspective, again, it will delay some strawberries 10 to 14 days. And normally the strawberries, they cover them up. So each crop is different, you know, with cattle. As long as it's not raining and cold and you fill the cattle up, they do pretty well. When it's raining and cold, they can lose a significant amount of weight and yield. And, of course, that can get into your net profit. So every crop is different. And the other thing is that as we look forward to planting, we've got to have our temperatures above 40 degrees on the ground. And normally we'll be getting into February as we start planting, you know, our corn, our cotton, you know, and soybeans and that sort of thing as we move forward. So right now, if it's going to be cold, let it be right now, but not really in a few weeks when we get into that February, March window. We need it really to warm up and get those ground temperatures over 40 degrees.
Mike, somebody wanted to know about at what temperature do you need to cover fruit trees? And I'm thinking about Plaquemines and the citrus people.
when you get down there, you know, below freezing, you need to cover them up. Now, if they're great, if they're large fruit trees, you're not going to be able, you know, to get some covers on them, but you can hang some sheets on them. And then if you go down to the base, you know, don't pile up a lot of ground cover on the base. You need to kind of open that base up. Now, you can make a ring around it that comes down to where it meets the sheets that you put on them, but you need that base open so you can get some radiant heat from the earth. And some of the things that people do, and my friends, the citrus farmers, will do, they'll actually put heaters out in the field, and these heaters, you know, burn, generally kerosene heaters, and they light them just enough to bring that temperature up just a little bit. And sometimes they've actually went out there and sprayed water on them so that the leaves will reach freezing, but no lower. But I think, you know, if we're getting down, you know, to about 27 degrees, mm-hmm. I would just wrap them. And that's what we're going to do here on Strain Farms. You know, we're going to cover them with sheets. And the other thing you can do, if you only have a few, you may consider putting a little heat lamp or a light bulb out there under that sheet. Be careful with the heat lamp. You don't get it too hot. Always be careful when you're doing that. But a single light bulb there under the sheets, just enough to bring that temperature up just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, you Hootie might have to bring in some reinforcements to keep you and Ms. Strain cold, warm rather, with this cold front. It might be like a three Hootie night. We'll take a break, pick it up when you come back. Huh?
Absolutely.
6:50, have a sleepover. Hootie can invite some friends over to have a sleepover. 6:51, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Mike, we got to talk about protecting the four P's during the cold weather and also about fire safety because, man, some idiot lit a tree in the French Quarter the other day, an old Christmas tree, which is not the right thing to do, and you know how close the buildings are in the French Quarter. But the only thing about it was it showed how quickly these trees can go up. So if you got one in your house, get the real tree out of your house for the love of God, because nothing good can come from that. Go ahead, take over.
It's time to get them out. Some people leave them up for Mardi Gras, but by now they are very, very, very dry. And if you've ever seen one burn, and you can actually go to our website, we have posted a video of one that we brought out behind the office.
I saw that
there in Baton Rouge.
Yep,
you saw that and lit it, and just you know, so that we could go ahead and film it. And it's amazing fast it goes up in the intensity of the heat, and it will set your house on fire. So please be careful. And if for some reason you are going to burn it, make sure you know that you have it in the appropriate place. You know, if you can dispose of it, you know, for recycling, that's great. But be very, very careful with it. Also, you know, you say, well, I'll cut it up in little pieces and put it in the fireplace. No, because it will flash burn. And then, you know, you will get some, you know, some really noxious smoke coming out from that. So please don't do that. And if you're going to, again, you know, when we get into this very cold weather, every year there are a number of house fires from space heaters. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the space heaters, you have to pay attention to where they are, you know, so don't put them, be very cognizant of where that heat is going to radiate to. And then periodically you need to check, you know, the electrical plug-ins. I know out in our greenhouse, and I was talking to Susan, my wife, this morning, we had one space heater in a greenhouse that the plug literally welded to the plug-in.
I've had that happen too, Mike. Talk about that, if you will, please.
Yes, and it was not hooked in. It was directly wired to a very good circuit, and it was a commercially available. And, you know, so and when you go, it doesn't want to pull out. And so, again, make sure you turn the power off and use some insulated electrical pliers to pull it out. But then again, if that base looks burned, you need to, you know, replace that or, you know, replace the plug-in or call an electrician. But you got to check them. And if you're using an extension cord for whatever reason, periodically put your hand on, you know, check that extension cord. And whatever you do, do not put it under a rug. Don't cover it up because that will cause fires, putting extension cords under rugs.
Quick word about the pets, Mike.
That happened at Washington Mardi Gras one year.
Quick word about the pets. Yeah, about the pets, Mike. Real quick, we got 30 seconds left. About the cold weather and pets.
So bring them inside if you can. If they have to stay out on the porch, provide some blankets for them. If you do use heat lamps, make sure they're high enough and that the animal can get out from under. Don't lock them in a sky kennel with a heat lamp because they can get burned. Whatever the pet is, whether it's a dog or a cat, a little pet pig or whatever you have, little pet chickens, make sure they have an ability to get out from under the heat. And if you're using any type of heating pad as a heating source, make sure you put layers of blankets on top of that, put it, you know, away from the structure, so that they don't have to lay directly on that heating pad, because they can get overheated and get contact burns.
Thank you, Mike. I'll go snuggle with Hootie.